Okay, it's 2 o'clock here in Washington, D.C. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us on today's conference call. My name is Christina Hunkin, and I'm Program Assistant with the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. I'm going to give a brief introduction to today's call titled The Department of Veterans Affairs Capital Grant Application. This call is being recorded and is made possible by technical assistance grants given to NCHV. And the audio recording will be made available to all of our callers, so if you registered and you received an email with a call-in information, I have you on our list, and you will be sent the recording of the call within the next few days. A presentation handout is posted on our website and can be found by clicking on the NCHV conference calls icon on our homepage. I sent it out earlier this morning, so everyone should have it, but in case you don't have it, do visit our website. It's www.nchv.org. On the right side, there's an icon that says NCHV conference calls. If you click on that, it will take you to our schedule page. There's a link for this call. Click on that. Then the first call listed says to download a presentation. Click here. So if you take a few minutes to download that right now, so you can follow along with Melanie. And there will be several opportunities to ask questions during this call. We do have a large group on the line today, so we do appreciate your patience when asking questions. Okay, I'm now going to mute all of the lines to reduce the background noise. Okay, and to unmute your line when you'd like to ask a question, press star 7. That's star 7 to unmute your line. Then to mute your line again, please press the mute button on your phone or star 6. So after you've asked your question, if you could mute your line again, that'd be great. We'd appreciate it. Okay, thank you again for joining us, and I would now like to turn the call over to NCHV's Director of Technical Assistance and Finance, Melanie Lilliston. Thank you.
Thanks, Christina. I want to welcome everyone on the call today as well. Today we're going to be going over the capital portion of the Homeless Providers Grant per diem program. This call is actually going to be in two different parts. I'm going to give some pretty basic information, some definitions, and give you a good idea of eligibility and some of the different funding opportunities, allowable costs, those types of things. We'll break and allow some questions based on what I've already presented, and then I will go into the actual application itself, and then towards the end we'll allow more questions on anything that I've covered. If you do have a question that is not able to be addressed during this call, I will be available via email or by phone the next week or so if you'd like, and my contact information is listed here on this presentation, and I will also give that towards the end of the call. So if you don't, we'll try to get as many questions answered as we possibly can, but if for some reason we don't get to you, this isn't your only opportunity. Definitely we'll be available in the next week or so, and we'll hopefully be able to get all of your questions answered. So if you will go ahead and take a look at the presentation that I have here. I'm not going to go into the specifics of the actual grant notice of funding that was posted on January 23rd. I'm going to go into the actual program piece of that. So we do have some more information of the funding availability on our website, and we did have a conference call on that yesterday with the potential of doing another one on the call. Just a few facts about the current NOFA, just to give you a heads up on things if you're looking to apply for funding. The current funding is for capital funds for new or expanding projects that are looking to serve homeless veterans. It's a $15 million grant notice, and each project is eligible to apply for that. They're looking to fund around 1,000 beds and in each state and country, each city and state across the country. The specifics of that are listed in the NOFA, but the key things here are that it's a capital NOFA for $15 million total, and that it is for new or expanding projects. So those are the kind of the key factors here. There are two other notices. The one is for the special needs grant, and that is basically a renewal for the individuals that currently have those funds. So if you are a project that has received the special needs grants in the past, and I believe it's a relatively small number, between 15 and 20, so it's not that many of you, but that is up for renewal at the same time as the capital portion. And there is also a technical assistance grant. All of the due dates for these applications are going to be March 25th, 2009, and as I mentioned before, all of those NOFAs are on our website, but today we're going to go into the much more specifics of the capital application and the different components of that. All right, starting off with the first slide here, I want to make sure that everybody has a clear idea of who we're talking about when we say a homeless veteran. Each of the federal programs do have different definitions, and when we look at the application and as you're designing your project or looking to decide who you're going to serve and how you're going to serve them, the biggest piece of eligibility, obviously, besides being a veteran, is that the person is homeless. So if you look at this definition here on slide two, someone who lacks a regular, fixed, and adequate nighttime residence or resides in any of these listed facilities. What is important to notice is that we're not talking about individuals who are living with, say, a friend or a family member on their sofa. This is someone who is living in a facility that is not meant for adequate residence. So we're talking about individuals who are on the street, someone who's in a shelter, someone who is, who has been institutionalized and has been released into a shelter system. Those types of individuals are who we're talking about. So we are not talking about the individuals who currently are living on their friend's, brother's, mother's, sister's, cousin's couch or in their house. We're talking about those individuals who truly do not have somewhere to live. The VA estimates that there's a roughly 196 homeless veterans on a given night. This varies city to city, and I would encourage you to download your challenge report, which I'll go into in a little bit more detail later on in this call, but that will give you an accurate number of how many homeless individuals in your area geographically by the closest medical center, and will give you an idea of what your homeless veteran population looks like. So just keep in mind that roughly there's 196,000 homeless veterans on a given night. This number has decreased over the last couple of years, but it is obviously, it still tends to be a great need in someone who do need a lot of services. Homeless veterans typically, the male veterans are twice as likely to become homeless, and female veterans are four times more likely to become homeless as their non-veteran counterparts. This is really key because as you look through this, knowing that you have a high rate of having these individuals become homeless also leads to let you know that there's a high rate of need in services for these individuals. So veterans, for the most part, we are seeing returning veterans are typically older, better educated, and sicker. That includes both mental health, physical conditions, as well as needs in relating to ongoing health condition. Veterans typically need a lot of services when it comes to getting them back on their feet, that beyond just healthcare, they also need life skills and those types of things, and that there is not typically enough government resources for all of the people who need these services. Obviously, for organizations such as yours who are serving these individuals, you are very well aware of this, but keeping it in mind and knowing that there are programs out there who provide services, however, veterans are going to have to be able to access all of those in particular to help serve them. Most of the individuals who are homeless and are veterans live with some sort of mental post-traumatic stress disorder and addictions that were acquired or exacerbated by their military service, which tends to help you know how you're going to treat these individuals within your projects and help them begin and put their lives back together. The one of the big keys that a lot of programs who are new and are looking to develop and create these service centers or projects for veterans, it's important to know that one of the main factors of these individuals becoming homeless is their lack of social and family networks. They've pretty much burned all of the bridges that they have, and there is no support left for them. Now, of course, this isn't always the case, but in most instances, for an individual who is homeless and they are a veteran, they've kind of gone to, they're at the last end of everything. And as you design and develop your program, it's vital that you keep this in mind. So not only are you talking about having somewhere for them to live, you're talking about extensive case management that treats the whole entire veteran. It's a holistic approach to serving them, not only giving them somewhere to sleep and to eat, but also how, maybe it's been a while since they've used a computer or have ever used a computer. Simple hygiene issues, how to interview for a job, all of these things are vital in the project that you should be developing and looking at. Some of the services that veterans need, as I've talked about some of these, in a lot of instances, employment is the most successful factor used. However, that's sometimes not very realistic for some of the veterans that may be in your program. So you want to make sure that you're looking at other things besides just employment. You want to make sure that you have coordinated efforts to secure housing and meals. As I mentioned, that's one of the most basic needs that you need to have. Health care, either through the VA or another conduit, depending on where you may be located. Substance abuse, aftercare, and mental health counseling. Are you going to have, or are you going to have access to AA, NA meetings, support groups that will be able to address some of the issues some of these veterans are facing? And if they are issues that are going to be based on gender, are you going to be able to serve both the female and the male veterans? And look at your target population and how those needs are going to be met within them. Of course, we're going to talk about personal development and empowerment. What do you need in order to help this veteran become and become much more successful and gain that self-esteem that they need in order to become efficient and effective in leaving the program that you have created? Job assessment, training, and placement services for those that are individuals that are ready for that. These are just a few variety services that can be offered through programs. Each program is set up a little bit differently, but keep in mind that when we're talking about the VA Grant Per Diem Program, or the GPD program as it sometimes referred to, that we're talking about housing plus services. So it's not just one component, it's both components together. So the Grant and Per Diem program, I'm on slide five now, is a grant program that is provided by the Department of Veterans Affairs, and they provide funding to offset the costs of housing and or service centers for homeless veterans. This program has been around since 1994, and they have approximately 10,000 beds. That number has gone up to a little bit to around 12,000 beds, but they are still always growing and looking to serve all of the states and territories in the U.S. There are two different levels of funding, the capital component and the per diem component. The capital component, which is what we're going to focus on today, is for creating facilities or new components of existing ones through acquisition, construction, and renovation. So, for instance, a good example of this would be if you're in an area that has a piece of land and you want to purchase the land, which would be acquisition, and you're going to build something on that land, that would be construction. So those would both be allowable costs underneath this grant. Your total budget would be the combination of your acquisition and construction. So when we talk about your total budget or your overall program design, I'm talking about how much the whole entire thing costs. The VA will provide funding up to 65% of your total budget. The other 35% must be matched by non-federal dollars. Some of the things that are allowed within the capital portion, or remodeling or expanding properties is allowed, of VA properties in particular. Acquiring VA properties is not allowed. So if you're looking to purchase a VA property, that is not allowed, but you are allowed to remodel or expand. What would happen is that your organization would enter into a long-term lease with the VA, typically 10 to 15, sometimes 20 years. The longer the better in this instance. They want to ensure that if the VA is going to put capital funds into this project, that it will be around to serve veterans for some time. Something that also is not allowed is the operating costs and salaries are not allowed. When we talk about capital funds, we are talking about construction costs only. And in this instance, construction includes your acquisition, construction, and rehab of a building. So another example of this would be you're going to purchase a piece of property in an area that needs some major renovations. And so the cost would be of purchasing that plus any remodeling that would go into it. So your total budget would include both of those things. What you submit to the VA for your budget is what you're going to be held to. So you want to make sure that what you submit is really the total of both of or either component that you may be looking at. Per diem, which you can apply for at the time of capital funding, the portion of that application allows partial operating costs for supportive housing and supportive services. So this is where you would get your operational costs. The capital allows you to build the actual facility for it, for the housing and services. The per diem allows you to operate those costs. Per diem comes in the form of around $34 a day for each individual veteran that is enrolled in your program. And this is based on the types of services that you offer. So it's a combination of services and housing for each veteran that you are put in there. But just remember, it is a daily rate based on the individuals enrolled in your program. And if you are applying for the capital portion and you are funded, you are eligible to receive per diem without having to reapply for that. The key is you just have to indicate within your first submission of your capital grant that you would be interested in getting per diem. The per diem rate will be determined once you have been funded. The VA office will work with you in order to do that. Excuse me. Some of the services that are typically provided, and this obviously is not an extensive or an exhaustive list by any means, but this will just give you a general idea of some of the things that many of the programs do offer. Health and dental services, of course, depending on what level and how close you may be to the VA, you may need to supplement those with additional services. Mental health, this includes your counseling, your case management, those types of things, drug counseling, benefits counseling for both the VA as well as the mainstream services. Food stamps, SSI, SSDI are good examples of this. Employment-related services, are you going to have on-site training to have individuals be able to work on their resumes, get job skills, those types of things would be included in this. Assessments, what are the greatest needs of your veterans and how are you going to be able to work with them? Not only what your case manager may deem necessary, but also what the veteran may deem necessary. Is an integral part of this that they want to be reunited with some of their family members afterwards, then that would be something that you would want to be putting into your program design as you move forward. Obviously, your basic needs, assistance such as meals, transportation, hygiene, those are always vital things that must be included, a safe place for them to live, how are they going to be able to be fed, how are they going to be able to get back and forth from their meetings or their counseling sessions, those types of things. Outreach and case management is obviously a big portion of that and will kind of fuel how you're going to move together and move through that project. Transportation, once again, if it's either individual or as a group, and referrals, any of these projects that may or programs that may be used by these veterans. So as I said, these are not obviously an extensive list, but it does give you a good idea of some of the services that should be included or at least provided to have access to them within your program design. The overall goal of the program is threefold. You want to make sure that it is going to increase residential stability, achieve residential stability, increase their levels and or income, and obtain greater self-determination. So these are the goals of the grant and per diem program, and these must be reflected within your application, and it is one of the key factors in the selection criteria of the program. So as you create and design your project, everything should tie back to these three goals and make sure that your organization is able to make sure that each one of these goals are being met with all of the services that you are being offered. All right, I think I'm going to take a few minutes here and see if there is specific questions on what I have just covered. I'm going to go into the grant application and the eligibility of some of these in a few minutes. But if there's questions on what I've covered so far, I'll take a few of those. *7 on your phone, and I'd be glad to answer any questions that people may have. If not, I'll keep moving, and we'll use that time towards the end of the call as well. But is there any questions on what I've covered so far? *7.
Christina, this is Patricia Calloway.
Yes, this is Melanie, but that's fine. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I just want to know, you have to submit the letter of intent first, right, before you submit the application?
No. For the capital grant?
Yeah.
You're going to submit the whole entire application at once.
Oh, okay. Okay, I thought the letter of intent went first and then the application went in. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're going to submit the whole entire application at once to them, and if you are conditionally selected, they will ask for some additional documentation, but no, there is no initial letter. It's going to be a cover letter with your application, but the application goes with that letter.
Okay.
Is there any other questions? *7. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and keep going through. Definitely we'll have time towards the end of the call, but I just wanted to be cognizant and see if there were any questions that we may have. I'm going to move on to the actual grant application process at this point in time. if you go to slide 12, I'm going to talk about eligibility of this application. So now that everybody knows that we're talking about the capital grant, we all are on the same page when we're talking about a homeless veteran and some of the services that they may need. We're going to talk about the actual funding source at this in the application at this particular time. In order to receive federal funding, and this is true for any federal grant, but in particular where we're talking about the Department of Veterans Affairs, you must be a nonprofit. These include 501c3s, C19s, C2s, anything that would fall into the nonprofit status category. The key here is that when you apply for your funding, you must have that determination letter from the IRS in your possession, not the letter that says they received your application and it's being reviewed. The actual letter that says your organization has been approved for nonprofit status. If you do not have that letter when funding comes out, for instance, if you are looking to apply for capital funds under this current round with the due date of March 25th, if you do not have a letter at this time, even though you may have applied for it, you are not eligible to receive funding. You will have to wait until the next round of funding. Veteran service organizations are included in this. State and local governments, and Indian tribal governments. So these are the four areas of eligibility that you must fall into one of these in order to be eligible to receive federal funding. The next slide on slide 13 is just a general overview of the application process. And as we move through these, I'm going to go in just a little bit more detail, but this gives you a snapshot of the whole entire process and what goes on during each one of these stages. So on slide 14, we're going to talk about the NOFA. The NOFA is the Notice of Funding Availability, and it provides guidance on the rules and regulations of the grant, as well as funding limits and the due date of the application. When this comes out, it's kind of like your first summary announcement of what is allowed within the grant, within that grant round of funding, the total amount of funding, when the due dates are, and what types of activities are allowable. So it will give you a total amount, it will give you the due dates, it will give you allowable funding, and it will give you links to the whole entire application here. When these do come out, you can find them on the VA's website or on NCHV's website. If you do sign up for our list, to sign up to receive our emails, which you can do on nchv.org, on the left-hand side, kind of towards the bottom of the page, you'll see a place where you can put your email address in. If you put your email address in there, anytime funding comes out from federal agencies, we will send that out in an email, and that will be a heads up to you with links to be able to download the whole entire application. Any priority locations and or populations will also be listed in this NOFA. So it's a really key piece for you to know if it's something that your organization is indeed interested in and if the activities that you're going to be doing are going to be eligible for this types of funding. Once the NOFA comes out and your organization reads through that and determines, yes, that you are interested and that everything that you're looking to do will be covered or partially covered within this application, you're going to download the instruction in the application package. This is where you're going to find all of the things in regards to how many pages, the whole entire application, and what goes into each one of these. In the general information and instructions, it provides on the organization of the application, any page limits and other formatting requirements, your font size, your font type, how you're going to format any of your cover letters or support letters that may go with that. If they are asking for particular attachments, it'll let you know how to put those in there. We'll also let you know about the required tables and anything to be included in the appendices. And it will also tell you how your application will be reviewed and scored. So most of the specific questions that you have in regards to actually filling out the application will come and will be answered within the general information and instructions. And that is the first section of the application. It's usually titled Section A or Application Part A. The second section of that will, once you've gone through that and you've downloaded everything, the first submission will be the first thing that your organization will fill out, and this is where you're going to fill out all of the information about the project that you're looking to do, the total cost of all of the things that you're looking to fund within your project and all of the things that will be going on with veterans in your area. One of the things to note here is that unlike some of the other federal grants that are out there, the VA's application is actually one that it's twofold. Is one that you're going to fill it out. It's been formatted in a question and answer period, which means that it will ask you a question and there'll be a space for you to fill in the answer. That space is as much space as you have. That space does not grow or shrink depending on how much text you put in there. It's a specific amount of space that you have to fit all of the words that your organization wants to explain that question in, and you must do it in that designated space. So in some instances, that's a good and bad thing. I always encourage individuals to know that don't go bigger than the space. If you answer the whole entire question and only that question within that space, it's fine if you don't use all of the allotted space for that. But you want to make sure that you answer each question in particular in the allotted space. The second thing that's a little bit unique about the VA's application is that you can apply through grants.gov, but most instances, individuals will print out and mail in the hard copy of the application. So once you fill it out, you're gonna print it out with an original and three copies, and all of those will be sent into the VA Grant Per Diem Office, which is located in Tampa, Florida, for review. A couple other notes about the application itself. As I mentioned, the Section B1 is the first submission, and this is where you're going to put in all your budget information, your project design. This will also be where you'll apply for if you're going to. You'll hit the checkbox for the grant per diem in this section and also include all of the general information about in reference to your organization, the number of veterans you hope to serve, what population, and all of those types of things. B2 is the VAN application. I didn't mention this before, but capital funds can be used for vans in relationship to transporting and transportation for homeless veterans that are enrolled in a grant per diem program. So the thing here is that you will have to provide the 65% match for the van. So if your organization is looking to purchase a van, the VA will cover 65% of that purchase. The other 35% must be covered in other private non-federal funds. Now, if you're not applying for the van, you do not have to submit this portion. And subsequently, if you are only applying for the van application, then you would just submit that portion of it. So that's why you have a B1 and a B2. In some instances, you will apply for both. In some instances, you will apply for just one or the other, depending on your organization's situation. The second submission, which is the Section C, that is once the VA receives your application, they will review it and they will go through and then they will ask you for secondary information. Once you have been notified that you are going to be conditionally selected and they will ask you to submit the second submission, so that will not be included in your original application. The forms, Section D and E, appendices, both of those must be filled out and must be completed and signed appropriately for you in order for your application to be received and deemed successful for that. Now, some of the things that I'm going to go through towards the end of this is how you mailed it and what's necessary when you go through it. But once you have completed and your application is ready to go, you want to make sure that you're going to get your application in time for the due date that's listed in the NOFA. So, for instance, in the current one, the deadline is March 25th at 4 p.m. My suggestion, obviously, is not to send it on March 25th and hope it gets there by 4 p.m. It's obviously to send it before with the delivery confirmation, either FedEx, UPS, whoever you deem worthy of delivering your application. It must be there by that specific time, and it must be in their office by that date or you will not be considered for funding. There is no leeway within that. Of course, if you have a specific question as you're filling out your application or need specific clarification, you can always call or me, Melanie, at NCHV. Our phone number here is 1-800-VET-HELP. If you have more specific questions in regards to what's considered a matching fund or what types of federal dollars, if any, can be used for your grant application, I encourage you to call the VA Grant Per Diem Office. Their number is listed here as well on slide 17. It's 1-877-332-0334, and let them know that you have some questions in relationship to the capital grant, and they'd be glad to answer those for you. Once your application has been submitted, it's going to be taken to the VA Grant Per Diem office, and it's going to go through a threshold review. What this means is that they're going to look through and make sure that you have the necessary forms. Did you fill out all of the forms in section A, B, C, D, E, if necessary, depending on what you're applying for? And they will make sure that everything is signed, all of the necessary documentation has been submitted in relationship to appendices and forms and budgets. And once they have deemed that your application is complete, they will go to a panel review. Panel review consists of 3 to 5 individuals reading your application and scoring it. There is a total of 1,200 points allowable. Your application can receive up to 1,200 points, and the grant readers will read through your application and give it a score independently of each other. Now, of note about these individuals on the panel, most of them are people who represent a good majority of the people working in the homeless veteran community. However, they will not be from your specific community, so it's vital that you take the time and really think through your application and make it very specific and clear to the types of services and housing and that you will be offering to these veterans. So the panel review is sometimes made up of programmatic, government, high-level government individuals. So they may not necessarily be totally familiar with homeless veterans. So you don't want to go and assume they know too much. In this instance, it's a better thing to include more information than not. The panel review will then score your application, and you will get a total of each 3 to 5 individuals. The total list, the total scoring is listed in the NOFA, and it will give you a breakdown of each category and how many points will be allotted for that. Once it's been scored, funding will be given from highest until the funding will start at the highest scoring and will continue until all of the money has been given out. If you're preliminarily selected in a capital grant, then you will be asked to submit the second submission and any of the additional documentation. At this point, they're going to ask for your site control documents, your match requirements, anything else that they may ask will be sent into a letter for you. But usually the biggest things are your site control, do you truly have control of the site, and where is your match funding come from? A little bit of another note here is that if you are applying for the capital grant at the time, if you are able to show that you have leveraging, that you are able to leverage the 65% to another grant and can confirm that you have those funds, that is definitely a bonus in your scoring, and you will receive higher points for that. A good example of this, and this is still acceptable, is if an organization is applying and they have received funding from another organization, even if it's contingent on the VA funding, you would ask them to send a letter that says XYZ Corporation will provide funding if the VA gives X number of dollars. That is a commitment and will be used favorably and be able to help you score higher in your application than if you were unable to have that. Typically, the turnaround time is once the applications are due, it's usually about 6 to 12 weeks, and then they will, 6 to 12 weeks of before you're asked to submit the definite application, the second round of submission, and then about another 120 days after that is when they will make the final announcement. So it is somewhat of a lengthy process, but the VA does do a good job letting you know where you are in that process and where your application stands at any point in time. If you are not selected, you are able to request a grant review. So if you've received, if you've applied in the past and not received funds, it is okay to call and ask them, and I highly suggest that you call and ask for a grant review. This will let you get some feedback on where some of the mistakes that your organization may have made, as well as where you may have scored high on it. But it will give you the opportunity to see where you can make improvements and improve your chances in the next round of funding. some of the things that work best and within the application and some of the things that the project has seen great success with in the past has been veterans helping veterans groups. A lot of these programs are run by veterans or have veteran staff working within them. It allows them an opportunity to really connect with and get a better sense of how they're working together. They can relate in different ways than other individuals may be able to. A lot of case managers tend to be veterans because they can then have that sense of camaraderie with another individual who has served the country. Transitional housing that has, as I mentioned before, the holistic environment that includes serving the whole entire veteran, not just giving them the basics, but going above and beyond that, finding what the veteran needs and making a real sense of community for them is sometimes vital for the success of these individuals and has shown through the programs over the years that this is the most important, one of the most important things to be included. This goes hand in hand with the individual case management support that often includes employment training and placement services. So one of the goals of the program, if you remember, is to increase self-sufficiency and or income of the individual. So if you're going to give them employment training and then help place them, then you're fulfilling both of those goals. You're helping to fulfill both of those goals by increasing their self-esteem and increasing their income or in their income capability. So those obviously work fairly well as long as you have the case management that can go with it. Collaboration is key. There are points given within the application for collaboration, and I'm not just talking about collaboration with the VA, which is obviously very, very important, but collaboration with other organizations and community-based organizations in your area. Is there someone that does a really good job of working with, not necessarily veterans, but the homeless population in your area? How are you going to work with them, and how are you going to make sure that your organization isn't duplicating a service that's already being offered by them? The goals that your organization includes in the application should be time limited and measurable. I always caution individuals to really think about the percentages and the numbers that they're going to serve within their program, because it's better to start low than to go too high. Once again, you're going to be held responsible and held accountable for all of the numbers, not just budget, but programmatic-wise within your application. If you're unable to meet those goals and objectives, then your grant will become under question and funding may be at risk if you're unable to improve your situation at any point. If you are targeting a specific homeless population of the homeless, which is fine, you want to make sure that you're able to have a very good understanding of what the needs of that population are and how your staff is going to be able to work with them. So a lot of individuals in some of the newer programs that are coming up are working with homeless veterans and dependent children, women and their dependent children. So obviously, gender is a big issue here. Are you going to have safety? Are you going to be working with veterans who are able to, if you're working with the dependent children, then obviously they're going to need to have a case management that includes access to benefits for the dependent children in their area, health care, as well as child care is a big key here. Another instance is if you have a mixed set of populations, how are you going to treat both men and women? Are you going to have, obviously you're going to have to think about safety of the women versus how they're going to be interacting with the women, other men and women in the program. If you're targeting a specific health need in regards to PTSD or mental health, how are you going to make sure that those case management needs are being met? So this is where I would encourage individuals and organizations to really look at their challenge report. And the challenge is a yearly study done by all of the medical centers in their area that provides an overview of the veterans' needs and the number of homelessness in their community. You can download this application from the VA's website. If you go to www.va.gov, scroll down a little bit towards the bottom of the page and click on Homeless Veterans. Once the new page opens on the left-hand side, you'll see the challenge report. It's the 2007 challenge report. The 2008 will come out sometime this summer. We'll also put a link up on our website in the notes. But this gives you some geographic numbers of the greatest need in your community by medical center. So it'll give you an idea of the greatest need, the greatest target population or where a lot of these individuals are coming from, And I would encourage new programs that are just getting up and running to think in how you're going to solve some of the issues within this challenge report. The targeted services and the lacks of services will all be listed there, and those should be your highest priority of making sure that you're being able to serve all of these veterans in your area. Some of the strengths of applications, as I mentioned, is that you're going to have a need assessment. Did you use a challenge report? They'll ask you specifically to talk about the challenge report within your application, but I always encourage organizations to use it to their advantage, especially in most instances, the number is going to show that there is a very great need in your area. Once again, clearly defining your goals and objectives and making sure that they are obtainable and measurable. You understand the goals of the program and how are you going to meet those goals with the day-to-day activities of the veterans. What is it going to take in order to increase their income, and how are you going to do that within your project? Is everybody going to be going to life skills training or just some individuals, and making sure that it works for your program design? If you're able to secure matching funds at the time your application is submitted, then you will receive higher points in the leveraging category, and this will be to your benefit. Once again, there's a really short turnaround time in regards to when you're going to have to show that you have those matching dollars, so it's very difficult in a lot of instances to secure that if you don't already have them in your possession, or at least have access to them. Coordination, once again, if you haven't met with or do not know who your VA liaison is, I encourage you to find out who that individual is. Give them a call. Particularly if you're building or creating a new project, you want to make sure that your organization is meeting the life and fire safety codes. Each one is different. They are a little bit different than your locality, than some of your local regulations. For instance, a big one that gets a lot of questions sometimes is that even if you're in a house that's going to be serving veterans, an older house, sprinklers are a big thing. So you're going to have sprinklers located within that house. And if you do have to include those in your construction and rehab, you want to make sure that those are included in your budget before you submit it to the VA so they can cover those 65% of those costs. You can get those things from your VA liaison. And if you're unaware who that person is, your homeless coordinator can tell you that. We will also put a link up on our website for the homeless coordinator by medical center. But you want to make sure that they know who you are, what types of services that you are providing veterans, and let them know that you're able to take referrals from them, and it'll give you a good sense of the amount of work that you are working with them. I also encourage you to reach out and get technical assistance when you have questions. Don't be afraid to ask a question, because a lot of this information is very, very technical in what you're working with, and it's vital that you get some clarification in order to get that done. So don't be afraid to call and answer questions, either me or the Grant Per Diem office. Kind of the next steps is, if your organization does think that this application and this type of funding is what you would be interested in, I encourage you. There is an actual notice out at this point in time, so you can go download the application. The application doesn't change very much year to year. The funding opportunity and the funding limits and those types of things will change, but the application itself is very, very similar. So even if you're not going to apply for this round of funding, I encourage you to download that application and get a sense of exactly what they're asking for, and that you are ready to go the next time that this comes around. Really assess the needs of your community and select your target population. Do you have a high women veterans needs? Do you have a high rate of OIF, OEF veterans? Where is the greatest need, and how is your organization going to do this? And then I also encourage you to subscribe to the NCHV listserv. This is where we'll list and post all of the relevant materials, not only training and funding opportunities, but if we have additional conference calls, or if you're looking to network with other groups, there is quite a lot of information that we do post and list through that listserv. So I think I'm going to go ahead. I know I've covered a lot of information in just a short time, but I wanted to leave some time for questions. So if you do have a specific question, please go ahead and do that. It's *7 on your phone, and I'll try to cover as many questions as I can in the next 10 to 15 minutes.
Hi, Melanie. I was just trying to get the website for for the challenge report through the VA.
Okay, it's va.gov.
VA.gov.
Okay, and then you're going to scroll down a little bit on the page, and it's going to say homeless veterans kind of on the right-hand bottom side.
Mm-hmm.
When you click on that page, a new page obviously is going to open up, and it's going to be on the left-hand side in the blue. It says challenge report, and that will give you a little bit of an overview, and it will give you access to download the PDF.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Millie, this is Paul Ostenbrug. I have an odd problem. I pasted something in that was 12 points, and now I can't reduce the font size to 10 point, which I really like it to be in that.
My suggestion is to take it out and then to delete it and then put it back in, like put it in a different document.
Maybe I should just
change it to 10 and then put it back in.
Maybe I should just re-download the document.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks.
There are other questions? Star 7 on your phone?
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
My name is Kay. I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
The first one is you had mentioned that there is the budget amount is $15 million.
Mm-hmm.
The 1,000 beds would be the goal. Now,
mm-hmm.
is that $15 million for the entire budget or
mm-hmm.
for the whole program, or is that per application?
No, $15 million is the total amount available. They're looking to fund around 35 organizations.
Okay. And then the 1,000 beds is also the goal for the entire program as well?
For this round of funding, yes.
Okay. Then the other question I have is, obviously, there's some areas, such as in California, that is considered a high or higher or more affluent areas, and the cost for acquisition and so on and operations will be much higher.
Mm-hmm.
Would there be a negative bias, so to speak, if your project was sort of a very expensive as opposed to other areas that are?
That is taken into consideration, and there is narrative portion of where you could include why your costs are so high. They have a pretty good sense of, you know, it's obviously going to cost more to build in New York City than it's going to, you know, in Montana, obviously, just because of cost of land and those types of things. However, you know, you are going to have to go through the appraisal and that process, and those are the types of things that will be vital to including and making sure that your costs are reasonable.
Sure. And then just to clarify, I think you had mentioned the 120 days.
Mm-hmm.
Is that after the second round submission or the total period for the first round?
After the deadline. So in this instance, it would be after March 25th. And it's just a rough estimate, so I can't really guarantee. But I would say by the end of the funding cycle, in most instances, starts at the end of September. So in most instances, you would know by the end of summer if you were going to be funded or not.
Great. And then to clarify, you mentioned lastly NCA List Service.
Mm-hmm.
Is that can you spell that correctly for me
our website, which is nchv.org. There's a lot of information there, but if you scroll down on the left hand side, you put your email address in and that will subscribe you to our listserv.
Okay, got it. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Melanie, I have a question.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Thank you. Not everybody will be approved, obviously, who apply. So, and you mentioned if you're not selected, we were to ask for a grant review. When in the non-approval letter, there'll be persons to contact and a phone number, or are you able to give that number and name?
It'll
now?
Be the grant per diem office, but yes, there will be contact. There will be information included within that letter.
Within the denial letter. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
It'll basically be the same contact information of where you sent the application into.
Okay. And so how many locations are there to where the applications? Okay. It's sent online. So it's okay. Got you.
Well, no, you're going to mail it into Florida.
Oh, to Florida.
Uh-huh.
All righty. Thank you.
But the grant per diem office is located in Tampa, Florida, so all of the communications going in and out of there would be directed towards that location.
Tampa, Florida. Okay, thank you.
Is there another question? Star 7?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. Yesterday at the teleconference, you mentioned that if your project contains a mixture of vets and non-vets, there had to be 75%
mm-hmm.
veterans.
Yes.
Can you? And my question had to do with our project. This is Joseph Selman, Cleveland, Ohio. and we have only 3 per diem beds. And how does that calculate in terms of the 75%?
Okay, well, in that instance, I mean, so you'd have to have 75% of your beds be veterans, so whatever that would average out to, and I can't do that.
So are we looking at, like, over a 12-month annual period that 75% of the beds, of those 3 beds, had to be filled by vets? Is that what you're looking at?
No, at any given time. So your two, in this instance, 2 and whatever instances would have to be included. It, with such a small number, my suggestion would be that you would have all 3 of them filled with veterans at any given time. It's not over a 12-month period. You're only going to be able to receive per diem if you have veterans enrolled in that project at that time.
Right. Okay.
So, yes, you did make a good point. 75% of your project must serve veterans. Meaning, if you have a 100-bed program that your project is designing, 75 of those beds must be filled with veterans. The other 25 beds could be filled with, their families, their significant others, children. But 75% of the total number of beds must be veterans. So, in this instance, it's such a very small number. My suggestion would be to have those beds specifically for veterans. You're only going to get per diem, we're talking about capital on this call, but you're only going to get per diem if you have veterans in those beds. And per diem is usually done on a monthly basis for the number of days the individual is enrolled in the program. So in this instance, if you have 3 beds but those beds aren't full, you wouldn't be able to charge per diem for those beds. Or if you have an individual who is not a veteran in those beds, you wouldn't be able to charge per diem. If you have more specific questions or want to get more details, you can call me offline and I can answer those for you as well.
Okay, thank you.
*7 if you have more questions.
I have a question.
Okay, sure, go ahead.
My name's Amy. I'm calling from Phoenix. And I'm just wondering, is there any advantage or disadvantage to calling out in the services section if the project will implement a harm or risk reduction model?
There is not. I wouldn't say that there's going to be a positive or a negative on either side of that.
Okay.
The VA is kind of leaves it up to each individual place because, you know, what you may do in Arizona may not work as well as if you're in Texas, those types of things. So they really want you to have an understanding of what works well in your area and how you're going to implement that within your project. So I don't think it would hurt for you to say this is what our community has deemed successful or working well, and that's what we're going to implement within our program as well.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. *7 to ask a question.
Yes, one more question.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the 65% allocation, if you have, you had mentioned earlier that if you submitted matching funds commitment, you would get more points. Does that mean that you're talking about the balance of the 35% if you were to show some commitment?
Right, the 35%. If you can show some already commitment to that, then you would get some extra points in your application.
Okay, now could that be something like a letter of intent?
Exactly. Yes, that would be acceptable
from an organization.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, can you just explain why? I mean, wouldn't that put somebody else at a disadvantage who is waiting for the second round to verify their commitment letter for the balance?
Well, you're going to have to show the funds regardless. You just get more points if you're able to show that those funds up front. So all I can say is that you get more points if you're able to do that.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Now, I will say that the matching funds can be in-kind donations or in-kind costs, but you're going to want to keep in mind that it must be, if you get an in-kind donation of a land or something along those lines or a percentage of the land, the VA will only match 65% of the cost of that. So it's going to be subsequent based on that. So some of your match can be in-kind matches, but it must be in kind. Your in-kind must be, you know, in that instance, it would be the acquisition to acquisition. So they would still only match 65% of your acquisition cost. Star 7, if there are additional questions. Okay, well, just a few points here is that, you know, you're going to want to make sure that you download that application, take a look at your challenge report, and make sure that you are providing the services and they're looking at the services that are needed in your area and then implementing those within your application. I also encourage you to get in contact with your local liaison at your grant per diem, at your medical center, I'm sorry, and they will be able to answer any questions that you may have as well as give you those life fire safety codes. They will also be the ones that do your inspection once the application is approved. So they'll kind of become your new best friend, if you will, and get to know them as well. But if you have any more specific questions as you look through the application or deem if your organization is going to apply for this or not, feel free to give me a call. I can be reached at 202-546-1969. Once again, this is Melanie, and my email address is nchv5@nchv.org. I would also encourage you to look through our website. We have a lot of resources, training, funding opportunities, and we will be hosting our annual conference here in May in Washington, D.C., which will be a great opportunity for you to network and get to know about other organizations and things that are going on within the homeless veterans community. But I'll take it if there are any more questions. If not, I will go ahead and conclude the call. And yes, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes, I'm sorry about waiting to the last minute on this, but yesterday I was due to do the teleconference and got mixed up with time. So do you have a slide presentation from yesterday as well?
The presentation yesterday went through the NOFA. If you were registered for that call and you received the information, you'll get the audio recording and you'll be able to listen to it in the next couple of days.
Okay. All right. Wonderful. Thank you.
Christina will be sending out a link to the audio recording and the notes, the presentation from this call. They will be accessible through that link, and you'll be able to access those in the next couple of days. So just give us a couple days to get everything organized and up. But if there are no additional questions, I'm going to go ahead and conclude the call and wish you the best of luck, and let me know if you do have any additional questions. But thank you for your time, and have a good rest of your day.
Thank you.